there's still so much to see.
You make me come alive.
Welcome to Explore Lake Murray Country, your guide to come alive in the jewel of South Carolina. I'm your host, Kelly Hughes, and welcome to all of our new and returning listeners. In the last episode, we heard a lot about the exciting features and history in Congaree National Park. And today, we'll be exploring another popular attraction in the region, the Riverbanks Zoo and Garden, located in Columbia. Here today to talk with us about this number one South Carolina attraction is Tommy Stringfellow, the president and CEO of Riverbanks Zoo and Garden. Welcome, Tommy.
Good morning. How are y'all?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I definitely want to dive right into your history and your background. I want to know your history with the zoo and how you came to be the president and CEO of the place.
Yeah, I get that question a lot because when people hear that my background was coming through theme parks and want to know how did I get from a theme park to a zoo, it's usually a quite interesting journey. Just to give you a quick background, so I grew up in Rock Hill, about an hour from here. I usually say Charlotte in case anybody doesn't know where Rock Hill is. And everybody that grew up in that area had to at least work at Carowinds, the theme park there. It's kind of prerequisite. You had to serve 1 year if you live in that area. And that's what I did starting in high school. And when I worked there, my first job was parking cars.
Wow.
And what I learned about parking cars was there's a lot of strategy behind it. And as they would teach you, and Disney teaches you the same thing, that the parking attendant is the first person you see and the last person you see, which sets the tone for the visitor experience.
Definitely.
And I've carried that with me, and I'll tell you about more about that through the journey. But I got hooked on that industry by working there through high school and then through college. And when I graduated at Winthrop University, it was Winthrop College back then, in marketing, the theme parks have huge marketing departments because they obviously want to talk about why it's great to come to this theme park, that theme park, and what's the benefits. So I made it my career to stay in the theme park business. And as theme parks kept growing and buying each other out, Six Flags ended up buying some of the parks, and I had the opportunity to go to work for the Six Flags properties, which at that time were growing and adding. And they asked me, hey, we've got some properties in New York that we're getting ready to buy. And my specialty was marketing and branding. And they wanted to take these smaller theme parks that were locally owned and turn them into a branded Six Flags property. So I spent years in New York working with three or four properties there. And my wife and I started a family, wanted to get back closer to Columbia or Charlotte, and had the opportunity to take the properties in Atlanta, the Six Flags properties there. And so we moved to Atlanta and worked with the theme parks and their properties in the Atlanta area, and got a call from a friend of my wife's who lives here in Columbia, who works for PRT, and said, hey, there's a director of marketing job that came open at the zoo. And I was familiar with the zoo. I visited it when I was a kid and coming, and, you know, it's kind of the place for field trips to happen. And I know a little bit about it, but not a lot. Mm. And I said, you know, I love animals. I don't know if I know a whole lot about the exotic side and the conservation and, the endangered side of it. I said, but I do know how to market. I do know how to operate a zoo. I do know what it means to have great customer service. And we were wanting to get back this way. So I took a chance, came, interviewed, and realized when you walked inside this zoo, I said, wow, this is an incredible zoo. They had done so much with it. And the community support was off the charts for Riverbanks. And I said, you know what? Closer to home, it's got a lot of potential. We see a lot of growth in the future. Opportunity for me to apply the knowledge and experience I had with theme parks to a zoo. So we made the leap, and that was almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it was probably the best leap I've ever made. Transitioning wasn't that much difference because it is a great attraction, but it has a mission attached to it.
Mm.
And that's where I ended up here.
Wow, that is so fascinating. That pipeline from park to zoo, and the fact that you were down here and your whole life down here in Rock Hill, and then you go all the way up to New York. And I'm sure everyone who listens to this podcast is going to hate me at some point when I say that I'm from New Jersey one more time. But I'm originally from New Jersey. And I love Six Flags. That was a huge thing that me and my friends would all go do. Even now, my friends who are in their mid-20s, they go to Six Flags and have a grand old time. But I think definitely when you say that leap, that is so inspiring, because having to almost defend your case in the sense that you were with these theme parks, which no animals are involved, and kind of the intricate things that go behind the scenes of a theme park, I can't say translate, not that I would know, but can't say they translate that well into a zoo. But I think you brought this fresh new take, which is really awesome to think about. And I think it really is like a motivating story to hear. So can you tell us about the history of Riverbank Zoo and Botanical Garden?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and I learned a lot about it when I came here in, it was 2002, I believe it was. And the director of the zoo at that time found out, and didn't know it, was one of the longest serving executive directors in the country for a zoo or aquarium. Mm. And we're part of an accredited group of zoos. There are thousands of zoos out there, some roadside, some others. Some don't practice the best animal management. But knowing that Riverbank Zoo and Garden was one of the accredited zoos, which is a very, very strict way to go through processes to make sure that our animal welfare, our conservation programs were just top-notch, kind of the gold standard of zoos and aquariums. And so when I learned a little bit about zoos, I would say the director was my mentor. Knowing that he was kind of the Disney of Walt Disney for zoos, I was fortunate to work for him for 15 of these 20 years. And then he retired six years ago now and had the opportunity to step into his role. But learned a lot about why zoos existed. And Riverbanks was created in 1974. We're coming up on our 50th anniversary next April 25th, yep, to be exact. We're excited and we'll talk about that. But about that time in the 70s were when a lot of zoos were created and animal management, animal welfare was needed for a lot of endangered species. So going back and watching the development of the zoos, and they were all about really finding ways to create assurance colonies. I kind of call them the modern day ark. Mm. Where you could protect animals, you could find ways to reintroduce them back into their environment. But the environments were changing so much over the last 20, 30 years that animals, most of the endangerment were coming from encroachment from humans, from, you know, illegal trade of ivory and things like that. So zoos were really focused on that the first, you know, 20 years. And then they realized, well, gosh, it's also a great opportunity over those years as the zoo started progressing to look at ways to incorporate not only educating guests about these endangered animals, but also some fun stuff, some recreation piece of it. And so they started evolving. And then in the in the last 15 to 20 years, zoos have decided, look, we can not only have a lot of recreation and education, but add conservation in there. It's a great mix. So as zoos evolved, I think people realized it's important to have places that animals can be cared for, can have a lot of research on these animals, understand why they behave the way they do, and find ways that we can maybe reproduce their environment in a safe place. So since then, that was the evolution of it. And as zoos continue, we can talk about what we think they can become in the future. But that's kind of a quick snapshot of what it looks like.
Yeah, that is so moving, honestly. Growing up, I would go to zoo camp every year at Roger Williams Zoo and Garden in Providence, Rhode Island.
Great zoo, by the way. I've been there before, too.
Lovely. Not better than Riverbanks, I will say.
There you go.
But I grew up doing that, and I know that zoos, there's a lot of controversy around it. There's so many pros, there's some cons, and you know, everyone kind of feels a certain way about zoos. But I do really think that going to those camps and learning about these animals that you don't get to just see in the wild all the time, and learning about what's happening to their environments and what we're doing to help, I think that made me an animal lover. I think that made me really care and empathetic about nature and animals. And I know Riverbank Zoo has some great summer programs and some camps going on all the time. Great opportunities for kids, which I think is phenomenal. I think everyone needs to tap into that. So I love the animals at the zoo. I mean, everyone does. That's the point where you go to the zoo. You're not just going for the dip and dots.
Exactly.
So can you tell us about some of your favorite animals or some of the animals that guests need to see when they visit Riverbank Zoo and Garden?
Absolutely. You're not going to like my answer.
Why?
I learned real quick from my from the executive director before me that the keepers are so passionate about the particular animals they care for.
Mm.
And they look at the director of the zoo to answer the same question, is which one of these are the favorite, because they want you, they hope that you'll pick the sea lion or the, you know, the rhinos or maybe snakes or, you know, whatever. And I learned real quick that my answer is like my mom said, when who's the favorite of the family, you know, it's, oh, they're all my favorite. And my answer is basically whichever animal I'm standing in front of is my favorite.
Aww.
So that's a political way to say, you know, I will say I do love the sea lions because they're so charismatic, is one of the many that I love. But yeah, you know, the I'd say, you know, if you make the trip to the zoo, everybody wants to see the dynamic, the big, the, and maybe even want to see some endangered animals that may not exist in the future.
Mm.
Recently, we had a pair of rhinos, white rhinos, who are very endangered. We were able to get a male and two females and hope that if they breed here soon that we could have some cute baby rhinos. One of our newest exhibits that opened right during COVID, I would highly suggest you go see it, because part of the evolution of what zoos are doing too is, you know, they back in the day tried to remove the bars, remove the front, find a way to make the environment be what they would be used to in whatever country they would come from.
Mm-hmm.
And as we saw, the connection to people and animals are usually when you can get immersed in their environment. So our rhino exhibit is one of the first that we actually built a bridge and an observation deck out into their exhibit. So usually you'll look across and see the rhinos from, you know, from the walkway. But now you can walk across the bridge on this observation deck, and the rhinos are all around you. I mean, you're standing in the middle of their exhibit, protected, of course, but it brought guests up close and personal. And we see that evolution happening, is how can we safely connect you with that animal? And then some of the, when I mentioned sea lions, you know, we give several presentations a day. Opportunity for you to see us feed the animals, to talk about why they're endangered, you know, what their lives are like, you know, in their environment. And people are fascinated with that when they learn about it. And then they get to see these charismatic animals. And a lot of ask, well, what are their names? And, you know, love talking to the keepers about these really cool stories they can tell you behind the scenes of their care for them. You know, rhinos, sea lions, definitely, but you can't miss the giraffes, because giraffe feeding, that was another one of those, okay, how can you get engaged with a giraffe?
Yeah.
And so our keepers who have to feed the giraffes, now we have guests that love to feed the giraffes, and it's a win-win, because guests get to actually feed the giraffe and get to learn about their tongue and how long it is. And really get up close and personal while not only educating them about the animal, but also generating the revenue that we need, not only to continue finding ways to invest in learning about their environment and actually even having our keepers go out to some of those native areas that they exist and help with care of animals like that. So, yeah, you know, everybody likes, but we'll talk about the Aquarium and Reptile Conservation Center here in a minute, because there are those that love the snakes and love the fish.
I was just about to follow up with that question. I know that is a newer development in the zoo. There's a lot of new developments. I'm not going to overshadow anything, but I know that was a pretty big deal and it was in the works for some time. So I'd love to hear you talk about what the mission is with the Aquarium and the Conservation Center, and anything that you feel as though people need to know about it.
Absolutely. You know, during COVID, when things were crazy, like everybody knows, we were building a relationship with Boyd Foundation, who we had talked to. We knew that their mission, you know, was a lot about wildlife. They that foundation and Susan and Donnie Boyd wanted to give back to Columbia what Columbia gave them. So their interest was when we took them around and looked at the things we had that the aquarium, when it opened, I'm going to say that opened in 85. I hope I'm right with that. It changed the dynamics of the zoo because it was the single largest exhibit we had, and it bumped the attendance from about 500,000 to a million a year, simply because, you know, people love fish, beautiful, aquatic, exotic fish that are always moving. Any exhibit, if, you know, kids walk by and say the lion's sleeping, they'll stay less than 5 seconds. Now, the animal's moving around, they'll stay there all day to see what it does. So indoor air conditioned reptiles and fish are such a big hit to our visitors. They stay longer. They love it. Well, that exhibit was, like I said, built in 85. And here we are in, you know, 2020 when COVID was really hitting its peak. Mm. Part of our expansion plans were to do something with the aquarium. We needed to give it a facelift. And when the Boyds said they were interested in contributing because they love the conservation plans that were going on behind the scenes, many people don't know. And this is where the Boyds saw some ways to be able to educate the public about what we do. Not only do we care for animals and learn about animals, but we have some really cool projects going on behind the scenes that I wish everybody could see, but these areas are so small. You could take a group of four, maybe six, and you know, you may have 12,000 visitors in one day. It's hard to get that many people behind the scenes to see this incredible work.
Yeah.
So their interest in this aquarium was off the charts because they said, how can we help you educate what you do behind the scenes? And I'll give you an example of that. We had partnered with other aquariums. There were about 12 others across the country that had the knowledge and expertise to care for coral. And along the coast of Florida, the coral reef was dying at a speed so fast that they felt within less than 10 years, and actually more like 6 years, the entire reef was going to die of a disease that they could not figure out what was causing it. And that the coral sustains lots of the animals in the ocean, kind of part of that cycle. And so the thought was, let's go ahead and take some healthy coral out. Where can they breed the coral? Where can they go? Where can they look at what's causing this disease? And contacted zoos that had aquariums, and we're fortunate we had one. And so we have a colony of corals from the Florida Reef Tract that were back in this area that our keepers, who are incredible with the work they do, are trying to figure out how to make sure we keep that coral healthy, in hopes of one day, if they can figure out what was causing the disease, that, and so I said, establish kind of a safe house for animals, and, you know, corals are animals too, that one day if we can figure out how to stop that, then how do we repopulate the ocean? Well, this is going on behind the scenes, and we could put a sign up and we could talk about it as people walk through the aquarium. But they were so fascinated with, and there are dozens of those going on behind the scenes, is how do we get more guests experience that? Well, we were challenged with, okay, how do we do this? We can't build the area behind it as big as the area in front of it for guests. So so architects who specialize in zoos and aquariums came up with the idea, well, look, it's, you've got the labs back there. Why don't we just cut a hole in the wall, put up a glass so people can see into there that are walking by, just like an exhibit of an aquarium tank. And that does when the Boyd said, look, we want to help make this happen. So for a year and a half, we closed. We reimagined every one of our exhibits in there to figure out how can we not only have some of the best reptile and, you know, and sea life, but tell the story about those particular animals and aquatic fish, reptiles, that they're just as endangered in certain areas. And when we reopened, the response has been incredible because we accomplished part of the mission of why we're there, and that's how do we educate those as to not only why zoos exist, but how can they help? You know, how can we educate them about things they can do, plastics in the ocean and things like that, that would help maybe one day change the cycle to a more healthy and popular, more populated one.
Yeah, that is so fantastic. And I want to highlight what you said about the architects coming in and making the labs in the back an exhibit. I think a lot what I was saying with controversies of zoos, people feel like animals are kind of being put on display, and there's this show. I love that in the last few years, a lot of other zoos and aquariums have been really showing off what does go on behind the scenes with all the animals, with the coral. It's so unique and it's different, and it really removes that facade that people have, or like how zoos are trying to kind of make these animals a spectacle. It's so much more than that, and it makes it so much more transparent about what is the mission of a zoo, what is the mission of aquarium. And it's kind of funny that these scientists and these people in the labs get to be on exhibit as well, and I think that's a beautiful thing. It's so great, and I love the conservation and education opportunities that people get to go just have as a visitor. But I'd like to know more if there was any more in-depth educational opportunities. Like I mentioned the summer camps earlier, but even for, you know, someone who's a little bit older, someone in my age group, perhaps, if they went to the zoo, what could they do if they wanted to learn more without just, you know, browsing the exhibits, if they could ask someone something, if they could attend a class, you know, something along those lines.
Absolutely. So, zoos and aquariums, I've learned, unlike theme parks, people want to work there. There are a lot of our keepers who, if they didn't get paid, I think would still work there. Kind of like teachers, they have a passion for doing what they do. And so zoos and aquariums depend on volunteers, hundreds of volunteers. At one time, pre-COVID, we had close to 600 volunteers on a roster that we could call to help with projects. That maybe they were master gardeners that wanted to somehow connect with our garden programs. Some that just wanted to come pull weeds that may have been retired and then or plant. So I'd say the first thing is there are volunteer opportunities for about everything we do out there. And people have expertise in a lot of things. Some don't have any, but they want to learn more. So we have on our website an opportunity that you go and sign up to be a volunteer and kind of, you know, say, I would like to do this or I'd like to do that. And we try to place you. And so we do depend on volunteers, which is probably the best and quickest way to get engaged with some of the animals, some of the projects that we do, not only at the zoo, but we partner with a lot of other conservation organizations, Department of Natural Resources and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, that we do things in the community on the Saluda River and down on the coast with sea turtles and partner with our other constituents like South Carolina Aquarium, who is also part of the zoos and aquariums. And so we work with them on other projects that they need help for. But then we also have some cool projects like a zoo teen project where you can sign up and if you're interested in becoming maybe a keeper one day or learning more about animals, you can sign up and apply to become a zoo teen where you work during the summer and you help us with our camps where when camps and kids come, they kind of aspire to either maybe one day want to be a keeper or they want to be a zoo teen so they can teach other kids what they've learned and carry their passion on. And so those are a few things that you could do, not only both in the garden but in the zoo. There are also ways, I mentioned these behind-the-scenes projects that we do. We found just like if you go to Disney or Universal, you know, you can experience what's behind the scenes that people are fascinated with. They want to see how things work, even if it's just pipes and motors and like, wow, is that what goes on behind this aquarium or behind this wall to keep gorillas fed and nurtured? And so people like to go see what's really happening, which is where you can make other connections to learn. So we have different, and we try to change them up yearly. Most of them are popular ways that you can sign up and go behind the scenes. There are fees involved with that, but once again, it's a one-on-one experience where you can go back and see our grizzly and hear more from our keeper who cares for that grizzly. So there are opportunities there that you can get educated as well, too. And obviously the fees to do that, I think, are reasonable and go back to the conservation and care of these animals. And then, you know, you mentioned there, you know, every day I probably have conversations with those that aren't sure they like zoos or aquariums for those reasons. Animals in captivity, we like to say animals in human care. Mm-hmm. The first thing I think they learned is we just can't go to Africa and grab an elephant and bring them back. Laws were established back in 1972 that prohibit removing any animals from environments all over the world. And people ask, well, what does it cost to do that? Well, we can't buy animals. That's part of that that treaty is no, and that helps stop the illegal trade going on. So the animals that are in zoos are either rescue animals or animals that prior to 72 that were brought to help find ways to breed. So what happens in the zoo world is we trade with each other when we have offspring or when we know that we're going to have a giraffe calf. We already know where that calf's going to go because we know other zoos that already have the room for them. We just don't willy-nilly, just as much as I love to have lots of them, we better have the environment and exhibits to accommodate them. So it's a very coordinated effort between zoos and aquariums. There's a lot of that that you can look at online about how that works. And, you know, I feel like we have 252 franchises that we're partnering with, other zoos across the United States that we meet a lot. We talk about care of certain animals. We have called stud books that keep up with the care of the animals and certain traits of animals that we may learn from San Diego Zoo or from the Bronx Zoo. And we share that data as one big database so that we can continue learning and how to best care for these animals. So I think when we have the opportunity for the naysayers, usually they turn into believers and we love the opportunity to say, look, give us an opportunity. Let us show you what we do. And then I think they see a lot of the good in there. Some still maybe not so much, but most of them say did not know that all this was going on.
I think it is so sweet and so cool if people don't know this already, but the circulation of these animals throughout, you know, franchising and throughout the zoos across America, I think that is so fascinating. And especially I remember not too long ago, I can't remember exactly what animal it was, but anytime Riverbanks either gets a new one or sends another one off to Cincinnati Zoo or Bronx Zoo, there's usually a social media post about it. And it is so sweet seeing the comments of everyone saying, like, bye, Rocky, or bye, whatever the animal's name. It is so cute when people really actually connected with these animals and they're happy to see them go experience a new zoo. But I do want to say, you brought up the garden. Yeah. And I love botanical gardens, and I know that the one at Riverbanks is beautiful, gorgeous. Please talk about it and tell me more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's won many awards. Home and Garden, HGTV, named it one of the most inspiring gardens in the country.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, and many other awards for it. But there's over 5,700 varieties of plants in this garden. Amazing. We have a team of horticulturists that trained, have degrees, that care for the plants in the garden. And back when the zoo was created, part of the land extended for the zoo across to across Saluda into Lexington County. So we're in two counties, excuse me, which is unique in and of itself. And because there are some containment things we have to do for animals, we said, well, what can we do across the river that then doesn't require us to do containment over there, animals. So that was when, hey, why don't we look at ways that we can take our mission, which is fauna and flora, of being able to care for plants and animals, and part of the conservation is grow and develop a beautiful botanical garden. That's how it was created. And in the garden is kind of divided up into sections. We have a formal area garden, kind of a old English formal where it's a brick wall around it with ivy that you would probably see at some mansion in England. And we try to have a lot of local plants, native plants of South Carolina, because we've learned real quickly when people come visit, they're like, I've never seen that plant. You know, where is it from and how do you care for it? And so it's maybe a native plant of South Carolina, only grows here in South Carolina, which then allows us to educate those that love the gardening aspects. And now we've kind of become the go-to place to ask questions about my plant. It doesn't look so great. What do I do? Nurseries are great at that too, but I think they realize we have horticulturists who love to talk about their plants. You could be in a 20-minute conversation for one plant if you want to, and they will engage you if you ask them. So the garden gave us the aspect to not only kind of marry the aspects of what a garden can mean to a habitat for the animals. And it was a natural that the horticulturists, when we design or develop an animal exhibit, know how to grow the vegetation or the environment of, say, bamboo in an Asian exhibit, how to make it not only look realistic but be realistic, because they have the wherewithal to put the foliage and the plants in on the garden side, on the zoo side with animals. And when people come into the zoo, I don't think they expect the beauty of the is a garden, even though we don't call that side the garden. I think that's made us partly successful as we are because of having the garden expertise on one side and the zoo on the other. Now, we'll talk about how that may be merging together soon. But there's a different clientele, too, for garden. Some that don't care about the animals. Well, guess what? We have both. And that gives us the reach of generations from, you know, from infants all the way to seniors, and difference of those that like gardens and just want to live and hang out in the garden and get to learn a lot more from the horticulturists that plant the area. You know, we have a children's garden for children. We have a vegetable garden to grow vegetables that we use vegetables to help feed our animals with, too. We have greenhouses that support the garden. We do tours of the greenhouses, and once again, you can go online and read a lot about the plants we have, ask questions. We will return phone calls for those that want to know more. And a fun little fact, and the reason why our garden's so important is we have koalas. We're one of the very few zoos in the United States that have koalas. Not many people know that. And part of the agreement with Queensland, Australia, who we partnered with to care for these koalas, is we have to keep an emergency backup of eucalyptus. That's what they eat. Eucalyptus doesn't grow in South Carolina. It doesn't grow in many places in the United States. So we FedEx in every day. If you ask me what the most expensive animal is of the zoo, most people think it would be your rhinos or elephants or whatever. It's koalas by far. And it's not that they eat much. That they're picky eaters. They eat just the tips of these eucalyptus leaves, but they have to be fresh. So our FedEx and UPS bill daily shipping in, you know, eucalyptus, because they won't eat day-old eucalyptus. It has to be fresh. So the amount of shipping of eucalyptus from several parts of the United States in is amazingly expensive. But we have to have as a backup in case there's a storm or something, or there isn't a way to get the shippers to the zoo, a greenhouse that's just dedicated with growing eucalyptus trees. So we have, you know, emergencies if needed. So that's part of the garden. And I'm not sure if we would have had the expertise to do something like that without horticulturists who know how to grow about anything. And so we love to give tours of that greenhouse, because eucalyptus smells really good. You just don't want to eat it.
That's really awesome. And this is just a quick question out of curiosity, but when COVID was happening and, you know, the supply chain issues and shipping, did that affect the eucalyptus deliveries?
Oh, yeah. you know, it got a bit complicated, and we definitely used our backup supply. And eucalyptus grows slow. So, you know, we were thinking this COVID thing would last a couple of weeks at that, and it went on and on. And another fun fact is, you know, our keepers love the animals so much. I think they would be happy if we didn't have any visitors, so they could just hang out with their animals and care for them. They did like COVID in a way, because, you know, they got to focus on the animals. And so we did learn, though, that, you know, what it costs to run a zoo when there's not any income coming in, and realized, too, that, you know, we had to continue because we have 3,000 animals, over 400 species that we still had to care for day in and day out. So we learned a lot about supply chain. There were many sleepless nights on, okay, what are we going to do if this continues on and on and on? And because all the suppliers were in the same boat, everybody was, you know, could they ship it? Could they grow it? Could they get it? Things like that. So it was tenuous times, but I think it made us stronger because we survived it. And we know now, okay, we can survive a 3-month run with tentative things like that. But now we know how to handle it better. Should it ever happen again? Let's hope it doesn't.
No, I hope not. And if anyone didn't catch that, there is no work from home, no remote options for zookeepers. You can't go on a Zoom call with the elephants and the gorillas. It's not possible. But that's amazing. And I personally, if I were a zookeeper, I would feel the same way. I think being able to connect and bond with the animal kind of outside of the spectacle aspect and feeling like you don't have to show them off in that way and being able to have a one-on-one experience. I'm sure it's magical to be a zookeeper.
You know, I will say we did some studies, all the zoos, San Diego, Bronx, I keep naming them because everybody seems familiar with how the period of time that there weren't any visitors in the zoo, we did a lot of research on the animals. Was it less stressful for them? Was it more stressful? Because it was a change in daily activities where, you know, when they came out in the morning from sleeping in their den, it was quiet. And we did notice a difference, and we have research written that we compared with all the other zoos that kind of studied the behavior of the animals. And it was pretty much determined that having guests there was a form of enrichment for the animals.
Wow.
Because, you know, we do a lot of fun enrichment things to keep them healthy, to keep them active. And that was one that we think the guests that walked by, that the commotion, the things that were going on, kept them really alert and kept them functioning. And you could tell that some were, you know, in a more laid back, like, what is going on here? They knew there was a difference. They knew something was going on. So we did learn a lot during COVID about animal behavior with people and without people.
That is so interesting to think about. I was, as you were saying that, I just can't even imagine these animals who, especially, you know, monkeys and apes in that sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're a lot more hypervigilant of humans. When they look through that glass and no one's there, after years and years and years of people and kids going up to the glass and them not knowing if those people are ever going to come back, I think I would love to take a look at that research. I think that needs to be talked about more a little. But I want to talk about the lights at Riverbank Zoo and the transition into wild lights. Some of our employees from Capital City Lake Murray Country were at the debut event. I unfortunately could not make it, but I saw some of the pictures and videos. It is groundbreaking. It really is. I have never in my life seen something with what you guys are putting on with wild lights. So I'd love to hear about, you know, why things changed, and I'd love to know about the art. Really, anything that you have to say, I'm sure it's really awesome for you guys, especially, you know, all this work that you've been putting into it.
Yeah, I tell you, last night was, I call it kind of our dress rehearsal, but we invited media, we invited our, you know, our special donors, invited those that support us, sponsors and all, to come out to see it so we could kind of do a test run before it opens. So the story goes, and we're expecting some really big things just from the comments last night. And we know we have a gut feel that this thing is going to transform what we are going to look like in the future. Oh, I think it's 38 years we've been doing lights before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, we were about the only holiday tradition in the Columbia area that you could do a walkthrough. And, you know, back in the days before all this new technology, you know, you could wrap a tree in your front yard. You know, now you've got dancing houses and moving things, and technology is caught up with the times. And over the course of those years, we saw others that paid attention to what this lights program was all about, and we started seeing them pop up all over the place. We love Saluda Shoals. They're a great partner with us, and they decided to add a drive-through. You know, didn't feel like it was competition. There's plenty to go around for Columbia. There's a drive-through, and they do an incredible job with it. But we started seeing their growth, our growth, and next thing we know, Fairgrounds has a fun drive-through they added. And last year, the Fireflies added one, and there are so many now. We started looking at, okay, we want to be a leader. How can we be a little bit different? What can we do to keep people coming back? Because now everybody seems to have the same kind of lights displays and the technology. I had visited, I'm going to say it was San Diego Zoo years ago. It was 5 years ago. So they had put on a Chinese Lantern Festival. They tried it during the summer just to do something new and add some decorations to the park. And these, you know, Chinese lanterns are beautiful. Everybody kind of knows what they are. And they had thousands of them. And the company that they hired to make them, put them in there, learned a lot about people visiting it. And somebody somewhere along the way said, can you make one of those lanterns look like an animal? And so they said, sure, we can make it. So they created a few animals wrapped in that lantern look, you know, the silk, and illuminated them with lights. And I think at that point, that company realized they were onto something because San Diego immediately said, I want a lot of these. I mean, a whole lot of these, and had the wherewithal to buy those. And so this company started contacting zoos that were really popular. I still like to brag that we're the most visited zoo in the Southeast from New York down to Miami. And people don't know that. We're fortunate the local area supports it so much. And we also think there's a reason why. So we were eyeballing this because there were three or four other zoos that decided to do it either during the summer or during the holiday season. Now, you know, summer here in South Carolina doesn't get dark to 9. So we're like, yeah, as much as it would be a pretty cool summer thing, we said this could be a good addition to our holiday tradition. And as we started looking at it, we realized, you know what? These animal lanterns, we keep calling them lanterns because it's hard to describe them. But these animal figures that look like Chinese lanterns were transforming what we felt was more our mission. Is okay, look, we love lights, but wow, if we decided to bring this company in and set these animals up, and we did last year, we put about 6 of them in the park last year, and we had so many comments from people like, wow, where did those come? We've never seen anything like it. That's what triggered us to say, you know what, our 50th anniversary is coming. Let's kick off our 50th anniversary with something spectacular. So we switched and said, all right, let's partner with this company. They came in about 6 months ago. They build them on our property. They designed them. They work with our creative folks and started installing them back in, I'd say, September. It takes that long to set them up.
Wow.
And we had so many comments from people walking around during the day, seeing them in the daytime. And they said, so what are these for? We said, well, it's a secret. You know, tell you about it later. And thus created Wildlight. So we feel really good about the fact that now some of these animals, you know, really look close to the same. You can spot a zebra. And it was more our mission of, you know, here are zebras now in the zoo that look, that are fascinating because they are glowing, they're beautiful. And we said, you know, this kind of meets our mission of animal and plant conservation and some extinct. There's some dinosaurs you'll see when you walk in there. We can talk about extinction and why it's important to care. So we're excited about it because it's something different, something completely unique that you won't see in South Carolina, at least. And then we don't compete again with all of our partners, who it's important that they, you know, have opportunities in Columbia to visit other things. So so that was why we made the move. Was not only, hey, a really cool thing for our 50th anniversary, but it fits our mission. We're animals, we're plants, and these things are absolutely gorgeous. And we realized last night, we expected some pretty cool comments, but I think people were blown away. We knew it had the potential from the other zoos we talked to that it would sell out nightly quickly. The hard part here is what you'll find is you have to go online and you have to reserve in advance. Mm. We will sell out. We're going to extend the operation into mid-January because we knew we needed more nights to accommodate everybody. So I'd encourage you, go online, take a look at them. Now social media is showing what they look like. The people that attended last night are just excited. They want to come back. I hope you get a chance to come see it soon. But that was why we were heading that direction. Something unique, different, fits our mission, and was in nothing like it in South Carolina. So we're pretty thrilled about that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think it's great because people in South Carolina or the Southeast who call Riverbanks their priority zoo where they go with their family and have traditions, now they get to make this new tradition because they get to see this absolutely mind-blowing artwork. And something that you did not mention, but I need people to know, is that they move. These structures move. They're like animatronics. I mean, there's like lizards, and they're moving around. Their tails are swinging. Their mouths are opening. It is unlike anything I've seen in a zoo by any means. And it is so beautiful. And what you said about the garden as well, I love that you also have the plants built and they're changing colors. I think my favorite one that I saw, again, this is all just through iPhone pictures, but there's a peacock and the lights are going crazy on it. And my coworker, Micah, our VP of marketing and communications, she was like, I didn't get the full video, but the tail springs up and it just explodes with color. And I think that is just so different. And it's also great for visitors, anyone who may go to one of these other zoos where there's a similar attraction going on, or they have these Christmas lights. Maybe during the summer, they're doing the lanterns. They are curious to know what other zoos in the U.S. are doing this and how can I go see that? And it's great that, you know, they'll say, I want to go to the most popular zoo in the Southeast. I want to go see what Riverbanks is doing. They see these pictures and everything. It is so phenomenal, especially with people sharing it all. What's your favorite? What's your favorite sculpture?
So this is funny. They've been setting these up for 3 months, and I've seen them in the daytime. Last night was the first time I got to see them as well. The preview of going to see them before then, but so many other things going on. I said, you know what? Our team is so talented, and this company does it so well. So, you know, I trust they're going to make this thing the best. So last night was my first opportunity to go out there and see. And I will say the peacock, it's almost like a show. Mm-hmm. It happens about every, I think it's about 5 minutes. Some people, and it gets so crowded around waiting for this peacock to spread its feathers, and they're absolutely gorgeous. What I saw last night when I walked in the gate. Now it's important to know we are still trying to keep a lot of the tradition we had in the past. We still have Santa every night through the 23rd. We have our roasting s'mores. We have the snowfall when you come in the gate.
Yes,
holiday music's playing. So we keep a twinge of that along with this new product. But I watch people walk into the main plaza, and it's going to sound funny. There's about a two-story, unbelievable, it's a cluster of mushrooms. We actually educate you about what kind of cluster this is. About every exhibit, we educate you a little more about the animal, and once again, an opportunity to talk about if they're endangered or how they're cared for. But they were so fascinated with this two-story tall. Some thought it was out of Avatar. They couldn't figure out what it was, but it was so mesmerizing. I saw many take videos when they and didn't move and stayed there and just looked at each other going, look at this thing. And then they can read about it because there's signage on the front of it. But that takes people's breath away. That I knew was going to be pretty cool when I saw it. But when you walk in there, you don't realize how big it is, how massive it is, how colorful, and the lights change. And you're right. There are a lot of moving things. There's some that blow bubbles out. The kids love that. There's a lot of interactive pieces where you can walk on lights that change colors. You can sit on swings that change colors. There's a lot of, interactive things that are going on within in a crab that actually moves. That one probably is going to say, other than that, the big mushroom is my favorite, is the blue crab by the aquarium.
That is so cool. And I'm dying to go see it. Definitely soon I have to. I also just want to go to the zoo in general. I love going to that zoo. It's gorgeous.
Well, thank you.
It's also really cool because I know that you said that there's some dinosaurs and, you know, some extinct animals. There's also some mythical creatures I may have seen. I don't want to spoil anything. I'm good. That one's really cool, so I'm not going to say anything about that. But definitely go check it out, especially if you're in the area and you have an opportunity. And like Tommy said, make sure that you reserve your time ahead and go on their website and get your tickets ahead of time because they do sell out. And I swear, as this gets shared more and more pictures are taken, more and more people are going to make this a priority to do this season. But I also know you have some other big plans going on with the zoo and the garden. I heard about this new Komodo dragon exhibit. I hope I'm not mistaken. Can you tell me more about it and when you expect it to open?
Yeah. So, every year we keep trying to do something new. And with us turning 50, I don't want to say we're getting old. We're kind of heading our golden years. A lot of the facilities need updating and rehabbing, and we had a donor that just absolutely loves Komodo dragons. So we have Komodo dragons. We had them since they were tiny, looked like little lizards, and now they're massively big as an alligator, outgrowing their exhibit. And so this donor said, look, would love to rehab that and give them bigger space and change it. So we've taken our Komodos out, and they're in our hospital in a different environment. While we have already taken the buildings down, we have a new design. You can see that online, what it's going to look like. And we're rebuilding it. If I'm not mistaken, we're looking at the spring of this coming year, and we're redesigning such that we can have a family group. In the past, we hadn't been able to mate or have, you know, baby Komodo dragons, baby dragons. And this gives us the ability to expand the housing of the Komodos and bring in a family set and maybe look at breeding so we can, you know, can contribute back to other zoos that would like to have dragons as well, too. So, yeah, that's underway. You'll see it. And there's a construction fence around it. I'm anxious for that to get done so people can come back and see that in the spring.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. And tell me more about the anniversary coming up. Every time I go on the website, there's a big old countdown at the top, and I'd love to know if there's any plans that you can share now. I know this Komodo Dragon exhibit, it'll be great for it to kind of transition into that anniversary, but what can you at least tell me?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I'm not going to give away all the stuff. I will say on April 25th, that's the actual date we open. That'll be the official date, and there's a countdown on our website. Mm-hmm. But we're going to make the whole year a celebration of our anniversary. So there'll be something going on all the time, some surprises that I'm going to leave it at that so you can check it out and see. But I will say those that have seen or followed us in the last couple months is that to kick off our anniversary, we have a vision of the future. And we've been working with the two counties, Lexington and Richland, for support in this new vision, and we call it Bridge to the Wild. It's an expansion of the zoo into the garden and to bring in a lot of new animals. And we've even said, look, it's a new primate forest with possibly orangutans and other type primates that we don't have now that would, you know, add to our collection. A nature walking path that goes to the garden that would have animal exhibits along the way, some native species like black bear and red wolves and even eagles. So we've already announced that. And if things go the way we're open, if the community, you know, really endorses this and tells the counties, look, we would like to see this happen. It could launch us into a whole different status of zoos in the future. It would include a new restaurant on the river. It would include a gondola that takes people, like you see at the ski resorts, from one end of the zoo across to the river, the beautiful views of the river, and into the garden, which we need transportation as fast as we're growing, yeah. A better way, a really cool scenic way. But that is part of the beginning of our anniversary that we've already launched, that you can go online and see the video of what's to come.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I want to echo something you said earlier about how technology is keeping up with the times. It's all catching up with one another. And I think it is so amazing that you and the zoo and the whole team behind the scenes are working so hard to incorporate this new technology into the zoo. And I think technology can also include the growth and expansion and the construction of the zoo itself. And I think a lot of people need to check out Riverbanks and understand that zoos are not old, that they're not something that you used to do as a kid. I think there's something that no matter what age you are, you can constantly go and see the new things that it's bringing to the table. And especially in our world with screens and everyone's always so busy and work is everything. It is so great that there are ways to kind of go into the zoo, a new or reimagined attraction. And especially what you're saying with the lights, all those new interactive things, what you're saying with the aquarium, interacting with the scientists and those helping the animals behind the scenes and all these other great conservational opportunities. I just don't think a lot of people are fully aware of it. And it's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast to talk about it. And I want to ask one last question. I want to know what the zoo, since you've been with it for some time, and I mean, I'm sure it's a part of you, what it means to you and how have you also grown and evolved with the zoo itself?
Absolutely. Well, I remember growing up and everybody said, this zoo in Columbia, South Carolina is incredible. And we're like, in Columbia? Okay, let's check it out. I think over the last 20 years I've been at the zoo, not only have I learned a lot about why zoos exist, but what Riverbanks specifically is doing for conservation and care in the future. Had a whole new appreciation for keepers who have the passion for the animals to want to care for them well into the future. What I got out of this was that I love working with theme parks. Love crowds. I love seeing families transform, smile, laugh, kind of putting their cares away for the day. And part of my goal was, you know, how do I, when families get there, have that same feeling, the magical feeling that maybe you get at Disney or Universal, but find educational ways to learn about the animals and see why they exist. So I got the best of the both worlds over the last years that, you know, I got the attractions and recreation piece that I so love with theme parks, but then I also got the conservation and the education piece that helps educate kids and generations to come. And it has been significant here at Riverbanks because I'm talking to three different generations of families that came year after year and love the zoo and support the zoo. And this community embraces Riverbanks, and it is what it is because the community and the taxpayers who support the zoo, you know, I've got to thank them. They're the ones that made the zoo what it is and continue supporting it. And to have that feeling of an incredible zoo that we're all proud of, and that when you're somewhere in the United States, somebody says, oh, I've been to Columbia, they have a great zoo. When you hear that, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, that is fantastic. And you are so brilliant. And congratulations on your time with the zoo. And congratulations on 50 years. And I just want to say thank you again for coming on our show. How can we keep up with you and keep up with Riverbank Zoo? Maybe social media, website?
Yes, we do. I feel like we have a talented team on our marketing side. They post social media, Instagram, Facebook, and probably the two of my favorite that I like to access. Always telling stories, interviewing our keepers. Great place to look. Our website's full of information. You know, we try our best for any events that are out there to make sure we're advertising it. And becoming a member. You get a magazine that tells you a lot about what's to come, a lot of great benefits. And that's the best way if you're coming back at least twice. It not only pays for itself, but, you know, we give special perks to members. And so, and once again, I think over 50,000 households have memberships, which is huge in the zoo world to have that many. But once again, that's where you're going to see a lot of information, kind of the firsthand information that comes out quickest. And yeah, that's where we are.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Explore Lake Murray Country. Thank you for listening, and make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. Keep up with us by following at Lake Murray Country on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and follow us on X or Twitter at Lake Murray CTRY. And don't forget to visit lakemurraycountry.com to start planning your trip now.
Hey!
You make me come alive.
I've never felt so free.
Can't get you off my mind. There's still so much to see.
You bring out the best in me.
There's still so much to see.
You make me come alive. I never felt so.